impressed because your kids are. You didn't have to get up.
So we are still here in Perek Chamishi, Yimei Ha'ava V'Yimei HaSinah V'HaYush. And last time we summarized this passage from the Rabbeinu Tam, but the fact that life in general and our religious lives is cyclical, and then we have times when we are in a good place, Yimei Ha'ava, the days of love, and then there are the Yimei Sinah, when things are not. And we spoke last time about one element of amplifying the Yimei Ha'ava, and that was chidush, innovation, finding new things, trying new things, freshness. But if we look on the top of the second column, there is a second element that is what he calls a gorim lahagbaras ha'ava al hasina, a cause, a precipitant, top of the left column, lahagbaras. The word lahagbir comes from the word gvura, to strengthen, to fortify, the ava, the periods of time when things are good, al hasina, on the times when they're not. And what are those? So the second one, we said last time, was chiddush. But the first word is hahana'a, enjoyment. Kol hana'a v'kol chiddush beruchnius magbirim es ha'ava. This is an important element, that Rav Volbi suggests that an antidote to the Yimei Sinah is hana, is enjoyment. There was a great rabbinic luminary who died a little over 30 years ago. His name was Rav Moshe Feinstein. Moshe Feinstein was arguably one of the greatest, if not the greatest, rabbinic authority in terms of Piske Halacha, of rendering Jewish law in the late 20th century. So apparently, Rav Moshe, he came from a small town in Russia called Luban, and he settled in the Lower East Side after he emigrated to New York. Apparently, there was a Yiddish expression of which he was extremely not fond. And the Yiddish expression is Shveret Zayin Yid. It's difficult to be Jewish. Good morning, Rebecca. Why don't you sit right over here? Brave the cold. It's okay. It's amazing you made it. So we just got started. We're talking about the second antidote to the days when we're feeling uninspired, and that is hana, enjoyment. So Moshe apparently did not like the following Yiddish expression, which was, is Shveret Zana Yid, it's difficult to be a Jew. He did not like that. So why did Moshe not like the expression that it's difficult to be a Jew? And this was the Yiddish expression that he probably heard on Grand Street, with, you know, among new immigrant European Jews. And it came from a place of like, oh, it's difficult to be Jew, but we'll do it. But apparently he did not like that, because he said that if the message that we're communicating to ourselves and to others and to our children is that, you know, it's really tough, at a certain point, people are not so interested in that. That's not a way to inspire people, by saying, you know, it's really miserable, but we're going to do it anyway. You know, as somebody, I don't want to say I love the Holocaust, because that's very bizarre, but I feel very connected to the Holocaust. My neshama is very connected to European Jews, I feel. But at the same time, I don't think that the reason that we should be Jewish today is because 6 million Jews were lost in the Holocaust. Like, to me, that's like 6 million Jews were killed. That's not a reason to be Jewish. That's not an inspiring message. Yes, it's very meaningful, and I spend a lot of time thinking about that and learning about that. But at the end of the day, there has to be an element of what he calls hana. There has to be something enjoyable. There has to be something that people like that's going to keep them connected. Because if people don't like it, they're just going to vote with their feet and they're going to leave. And we see that. People who find that Yiddishkeit is wretched and miserable, you know what happens? They stop observing. That's obvious. Of course they're not going to. And so, on one hand, it's an obvious point, but oftentimes we don't necessarily take the time to think about that. So We should take a step back and ask ourselves the question, is there hana, is there enjoyment in our Yiddishkeit, in our Judaism? And if the answer is no, then we really need to think about that. Why not? And is it supposed to have hana? Well, is there a difference between enjoyment and fun on one side and meaning and pleasure on the other side? So I think this is an important topic to think about, because sometimes we associate Judaism with something that is difficult, which it is. It's not an easy lift. But does it have to be horrible? Right? Do people think, if you ask somebody and you tell them, what do you think about Orthodox Judaism? You know, how many people would say, oh, it's so enjoyable? Not enough. And the question is, do we feel that way? So I wonder if one way to look at this is in the following distinction. And I'll use a halachic term to illustrate the point. There is something in halacha called a harama. Harama is a legal fiction. It's technically on the books, but it's a bit of an end around. So I'll give you an example. Let's say you live in Israel and you want to buy a house. So how do you buy a house if you don't have $1 million in cash? What do you need? What's that? You need a mortgage. But there is a din that a Jew is not allowed to lend another Jew money with interest. So how do you get a mortgage in Israel? How do you get any bank loan? So there's something called a heter iska. Heter iska is an instrument, a legal instrument that dates back centuries, but today it's amazing, because in the state of Israel, some banks even have it hanging in the window. They have a heter iska. The bank signs up that basically when they provide a loan for someone, it's on the books, it's basically a business investment, and they share the risk on some level. So this heter iska was hundreds of years ago was instituted because otherwise there would have been an economic freeze. Nobody would lend each other money if there's no financial benefit. So this idea of a heter iska is a halachic end around. There's supposed to be a principle of not lending people money with interest, and yet we circumvent it with this tool. When else do we do this? Every single year. Similar kind of thing. It's like a shtick. We do it every Erev Pesach. What do? Sell our chametz. Great. The mitzvah is to get rid of the chametz, to be mevayer the chametz. It actually started in Europe hundreds of years ago with innkeepers who their only source of income was whiskey. If you told an innkeeper in Poland somewhere that they had to spill out all their whiskey on Erev Pesach, so they wouldn't be able to live. It's not for today, which, you know, people do use heter of mechiras chametz today, and it's totally fine, but it wasn't because, you know, in Europe people had money and they had, it was originally invented for people who were absolutely indigent, and this was the only way they could make a living. If they had to pour out their two bottles of schnapps from their inn, they would be impoverished. And nobody says anything bad about the heter iska, or the heter mechiras chametz, or other kinds of heterim kamsit, or other kinds of, good morning, of leniencies like this. These are called haramas, these are legal fictions to circumvent a din. But you notice, and Rav Schechter, my Rebbe from YUE, points this out, he says that these legal fictions are in a specific context, and I wonder if it makes a lot of sense. He says that you could do a harama, you could do a legal fiction, an end around, to avoid a lo sase, a negative commandment. Right? There's a negative commandment not to lend somebody money with interest. Or there's a negative commandment not to have chametz on Pesach. There's a big controversy. It's more than just this one narrow point, but it's similar to this about the heter mechira, selling the land in Israel for the Shemitah question, how to navigate Shemitah. But they all fall into the same category. When do you allow a harama? When it's a negative commandment. So if you could circumvent that negative commandment some other way, that's okay. But what about a positive commandment? Is it proper to do a harama to circumvent a positive commandment, to observe something that you should observe? So Schechter points out, he says, we don't find that that's proper. Right? We wouldn't say that somebody, it would be proper for them to take a sleeping pill on Erev Pesach that'll put them to sleep for 18 hours, and they'll wake up the next day and they miss the chiyuv of matzah. That's a harama. That's a, technically they were asleep, they were unconscious, whatever it is. But that's not recommended. So why is it that we have banks in Israel that have signs for Heter Iska, but we don't have signs to sign people up for? Because these are two different categories of mitzvahs. A lav, a losa, say, is a restriction. And that's meant to keep you away from a spiritual pitfall. Well, if you can avoid that, however you avoid it, gives into hate. But there's nothing inherently geschmack, there's nothing inherently great about not having chametz on Pesach. As long as you don't have chametz on Pesach, that's good, you're okay. Now, there's nothing inherent about a lav. A lav is meant to protect you. It's meant to be a fence from something that is sanctified. So if you can not fulfill it, but not violate the principle that's behind it, then that's fine. There's nothing, you can argue, there's nothing inherently fun about a restriction. It's meaningful, it has a purpose, but it's not inherently geschmack. So for example, you know, it's a good example of restrictions where it comes up, even though this is not a mitzvah d'oraisa, it's not a din d'rabbanan, but there are restrictions, let's say, for nihuge avelos. Right? A person who, God forbid, is an avel, so they can't shower for a week, and they can't go somewhere fun for a period of time, depending on what their avelos is, and they can't say hello to people, and they can't learn. So are those inherently enjoyable restrictions? No, they're not inherently enjoyable, but they're meant to protect something. They're meant to protect the integrity of the process of mourning. Because if we didn't have nihug avelos, people would have no way to emotionally cope with the loss that they had. My father, he had a coworker where he used to be employed in the U.S. government. He had a coworker who, I forget who it was, a relative of theirs died suddenly, but they didn't observe Shiva. They weren't Jewish. So he went back to work the next day. And then either that day or the following day, the person pulled over to the side of the road and they couldn't drive. They had a total breakdown. They were crying uncontrollably on the side of the road. Couldn't come to work because they didn't have a way of processing it. So would you say that the Nihugi Avelis or other of Lavin do they have Hana from them? You do, but it's not in the same way as like going on, for some people, like going on a roller coaster or eating a piece of chocolate. It's a lo sase, so it's meant to be meaningful, but it's not necessarily inherently pleasurable. Similarly, you know, the laws of Nida. So nobody would say that those are fun to sign up for those, but they're meant to safeguard and provide a context for a healthy, intimate relationship in marriage. So a lo sase, I would say, is different than an ase, right? A lo sase, if you want more on this, Rav Soloveitchik has an article called Catharsis, an old article, I think from the 1970s. Rabbi Joseph E. Soloveitchik talks about how sometimes, and he relates this, I think we can relate them to the lowest essays, that you have to surrender, you have to sacrifice something to create meaning in your life in Yiddishkeit. So it's difficult, it's not so easy, but that's meaningful. On the other hand, there is the positive commandment, the assay, where you're not supposed to do an end around because that's supposed to be letov lach. There is a din that there's supposed to be an achilas matzah. You have to eat matzah on the night of the Seder. So some people, first of all, some people actually like matzah, like my wife's family. They all love matzah. That's not my favorite food in the world. But it's an interesting idea that in the times of the Gemara, first of all, in the times of the Gemara, matzah did not taste. I don't want to say anything bad about the way that matzah tastes because it could come off the wrong way. But I personally don't love matzah, unless maybe it has like some chopped liver and it's like a cracker type of thing. But inherently, eating half a piece of cardboard is not a great, awesome thing. But historically, matzo did not look like or taste like cardboard. It was more like a lafa. And if you were living in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, basically it was a shawarma. You had a korech, which means it was round. You ever take a piece of matzah and try to make it pliable? It doesn't work. But in those days, they had lafa, so it was pliable. So they had a soft piece of dough, and inside the dough, they put meat from the Korban Pesach, and they put salad, harif, and that was your lafa. That was delicious. So much so that the Gemara says you have to be careful not to eat on Erev Pesach a meal in the afternoon. So even today, people are careful about this, not to make hamotzi on Erev Pesach. Why not? Because you have to eat the matzah l'teyavon. You have to enjoy it. So what is the Chazal trying to do with this? Why are they telling you this? Because what they're saying is that when you do a mitzvah, it's supposed to be enjoyable. It's supposed to be geschmack, as you would say in Yiddish. You're supposed to have hana. There is a comment of the Sachachav Rebbe, Rav Avram Bornstein, the author of the Eglay Tal, the Avnei Nezer. So he says, people think that learning is supposed to be just for the sake of learning. And if you enjoy learning, then it's not so good. He says, they're totally dead wrong. He says, learning is supposed to be enjoyable. Now, it's not always easy to find the thing that you learn that's going to connect to you, that's going to be enjoyable. But in principle, he says, the point of learning is that you should engage with the learning. You should find it interesting. You should find it compelling. And then you should have your own perspective, your own insights. You should build your own shiur. And when you finish, you feel like, oh, that was so great. That was so enjoyable. And he says, that's not diminishing your fulfillment of the mitzvah. He says, that's actually enhancing your fulfillment of the mitzvah. So now, if we think about this, we realize that the mitzvahs that we do are supposed to have hana in them. They're supposed to be enjoyable. There was a great old mashal. I had a grandmother, Alei Hashalom. She came from Israel a few years ago from Chicago to visit us. She was in her 80s, so I always envision her with this mashal. She came, she had to change in Atlanta, she came to O'Hare. So she, of course, when we helped her arrange the ticket, so she, of course, needs a wheelchair and a porter with the whole thing. So you imagine an elderly woman, she's in her 80s, and she's traveling, and she gets to O'Hare, and they have the porters who wait when you disembark from the plane. All the regular passengers come off, and then the wheelchair accessible passengers, they take them from the plane, from the jet bridge, all the way down stairs to the baggage claim, and they wait on the side of the baggage claim. So imagine there's an elderly woman sitting there, and her eyesight is not so good, but they line up the wheelchairs in the back because they don't want them to be right next to the conveyor belt because they're going to be knocked over by hundreds of people climbing on them. So they put the wheelchairs on the side, and then the porter goes to the conveyor belt to pick up the bags. So the woman says to the porter, says, you know, I have a medium-sized black wheelie. You'll find it. The porter thinks, he says, you know, this is this 777. There are probably 350 bags on the plane. No, you'll see it. Fine. So the guy goes over there, and he's standing at the conveyor belt, and all the little bags are coming along. Finally sees one bag. It's a black bag, so he figures this is probably a black, what they used to call valise. Remember when they called it a valise? A black valise. So he lifts it up, and he starts picking it up, and the woman who's far away looks up and waves him off. She says, that's not the bag. Says, okay. So he puts the bag back down on the table and back down on the conveyor belt, and the conveyor belt comes along, and another bag comes up, and he lifts it up. This time he needs two hands. He picks it up, and the woman looks from afar, and she says, not my bag. Finally, the third bag coming along, the black bag, he's looking, he's checking, he thinks it's probably this is the one. He picks it up. He picks it up, and the woman says, come like this. So she calls the porter over. She takes the bag. She inspects it multiple times. She checks the tag. It's her name. She says, this is the bag. So the man says, excuse me, ma'am. I want to understand. It took you 2 minutes to identify this bag when I put it in your lap. How did you know from all the way over there, I don't know how good your eyesight is, with respect, how did you know from over there that the bag that I picked up on the belt the first time and the second time was not your bag? She says, it's obvious. I'm an 83-year-old lady. I pack very light. When you had to struggle to pick the bag off of the belt, I knew right away, it's not my bag. A person who looks at Yiddishkeit and feels that it's such a hard lift, that they have to struggle so much to find it enjoyable, they're picking up the wrong bag. I don't know whose bag they got, but it's not the right bag. They got to look again and figure out, where did this bag get so heavy from? You know, where's the baggage coming from? Inherently, it's supposed to be enjoyable. It's supposed to be nice. It doesn't mean it's not challenging. Anything that's meaningful requires work, requires effort. And it doesn't mean it's always great. You know, Shabbos candles, Friday night, we had a discussion a few weeks ago about the mitzvah of Hadlakas Ner Shabbos. Shabbos candles are supposed to be beautiful. It's a very meaningful thing, and it's supposed to be enjoyable. Does it not mean that sometimes lighting Shabbos candles is the craziest, most insane time of the week? And people are ready, mamish, like this is enough to put somebody on medication. One Friday night lighting Shabbos candles. Like seriously, it's crazy. It's crazy, terrible, horrible, insane in the house. That happens sometimes. That's okay. But the Ikaron, right, in its core, in its fullest state, Shabbos candles are supposed to be beautiful and supposed to be enjoyable. And people are supposed to look forward to it. And the same thing with davening and all the mitzvahs that we do. It's supposed to be Latov Lach, the Pasuk says. So I wonder if when Rav Volbi talks about Hagbaras Ha'ava is Hana, is that we need to take a step back and think about how do we define Hana in Yiddishkeit, and how is that going to relate to the mitzvos and the tekufa of Ahava? Right? If we're saying, and this is what we spoke about last week, is that life runs in cycles, and that there are cycles of times when we're feeling good about Yiddishkeit, and then things when things are not going well. So the way that we're going to amplify when things are going well is to enjoy it. So first of all, we have to realize that it's supposed to be enjoyable. So we should distinguish, first of all, between the lois assays and the assays. The lois assays, if we expect those are going to be a lot of fun, we're going to be disappointed. I think this is just my own two cents. You know, if somebody says that it's fun not to eat donuts for a whole 8 days, then they've either never had Krispy Kreme donuts, right? Or we just don't see things eye to eye. That's not inherently fun, but it's profoundly meaningful. So the word hana needs to be carefully calibrated. That's on one side. On the other side, if a person never enjoys making kiddush on a Friday night, if a person never enjoys davening, if a person never enjoys learning or any of the other mitzvahs that we have our opportunity to do, then they have to figure out why are they not enjoying them? What is lacking in their experience? So these two, I wonder if they actually fit together very nicely. The lois assays that are more meaning-based and the assays that are more pleasure-based, because if you look in Tal Ben Shachar is this Harvard professor, although I don't think he teaches in Harvard anymore. He runs around the world speaking about happiness. He did the most popular class in Harvard ever on happiness. 1,600 students signed up to learn about positive psychology, which is pretty impressive. This Israeli guy who figured out how to make a very good living talking about happiness. That's great. So what does he say is the definition of happiness? He says it's the nexus between meaning and pleasure. That's how he defines happiness. And I wonder if that is the way to look at the relationship between los assays and assays. The los assays are very meaningful. They're not easy. They're not inherently fun, enjoyable, but they are very meaningful. They provide a structure for our life that enables us to, you know, is it instantly enjoyable to disconnect from technology for 24 hours? Probably not. A lot of people would say it's not enjoyable. It's not enjoyable to not be able to drive and have to walk. But that meaning provides a very important structure for a spiritual life. And then there is the pleasurable side. You know, it's fun. When things are going ideally, it's not always perfect. It's not always that way. I know, at least I should speak for my own life. It's not always awesome when you sit down to make kiddush, and this one is fighting with that one, just speaking theoretically, just saying. And this one is bothering that one, and it's like, and this one doesn't want to be there. But in theory, as a matter of principle, making kiddush should be enjoyable. It should be delicious. That's why Chazal instituted that you should have a cup of wine, because it's supposed to be enjoyable. When you have a celebratory moment, it's not supposed to be reclusive. It's not supposed to be in some monastery in the Himalayas where nobody, you know, enjoys themselves. It's got to be enjoyable. It's got to have hana. And the more that we can emphasize finding the meaning in the lois assays, and more than that, the enjoyment in the mitzvahs assay, so then potentially we can expand on, we could be magbir, as Rav Volbi says, the ava on the sin, and the, over the sinna through this concept of hana. Questions, comments, or observations?
What's the derivation of the word hana?
Comes from the word na'eh, which means beautiful. So, for example, the Gemara says in Masechta Shabbos that when you perform a mitzvah, it's supposed to be beautiful, based on the verse, Zeh Keli, this is my God, ve'anvehu, that it will be na'eh. So when you build a sukkah, it's supposed to be beautiful. And when you buy an esrog or a lulav, or you light a Hanukkah candles, so it's supposed to be muhudar, it's supposed to be beautiful. So that, I think, plays into the same point, which is that, A, if we enjoy it, we're going to make it beautiful. If we don't enjoy it, we're just going to do whatever the basic, you know, the basic requirement is, and then we'll dispense of it. But the opposite is true also, is that the more we make it beautiful, the more we'll enjoy it. You know, if you make it into a beautiful experience, so it'll be more beautiful. It'll be more enjoyable. If you say, you know, you're not going to invest, then it's just going to be pathetic, so then you're not going to enjoy it as much. So the word hana and na'eh are definitely related to each other on this point. All right. I hope you all have a wonderful day and slog through it out there. That's all I could say.